Welcome to the cycling podcast coverage of the 2025 Vuelta a España, proudly supported by Lloyds. Lloyds are proud partners of British cycling, where horsepower meets pedal power. The partnership includes title sponsorship of the forthcoming Lloyds Tour of Britain Men, and the winner of that race will take home the coveted green jersey featuring the famous Lloyds horse. Lloyds' partnership with British cycling goes far beyond Britain's national tours too. Lloyds sponsors the National Series and National Championships for road racing, track cycling, BMX and cyclocross. And over the coming years, Lloyds will be celebrating every type of cycling, inspiring people to get moving. Lloyds, there at every stage. Now it's over to Daniel and our Vuelta coverage.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the 2025 Vuelta a España, celebrating 10 years of the cycling podcast on the ground every day at the Grand Tours.
Michele Pelacci, buenas tardes.
Daniele, buonasera. It's raining on us.
It's so confusing, isn't it? Is it the Vuelta d'Italia or the Giro di... No, the Giro... It wouldn't be the Giro di Spagna, would it? Because we're not there yet. But Michele, we are in Limone, Piemonte. We established today that it has nothing to do with lemons, although the Italian word for limone, for lemons, is limone. Mm-hmm. More about lemons later, maybe. Out of lemons, you made something more than lemonade earlier. But Michele, describe the scene.
We are in a misty...
If you can see anything.
Yeah, it's a misty environment, right? We are surrounded by fog. Some light rain is coming down on our laptops. We are on a terrace overlooking this hamlet above Limone Piemonte. More on that later. We can see anything.
We cannot see anything. Michele, what did we establish that Limone Piemonte was named after? It was trees, wasn't it? It was something that was contested, disputed, mm-hmm, between, well, various different theories about why Limone Piemonte is called Limone Piemonte. We don't need to go into that, but I just did tease something, another absolute classic from you this morning. And we talked yesterday about how I'd been calling you the cook, the chef who's constantly cooking but never produces anything. I was nicknaming you today Carlo Cracco. Is a very famous Italian chef. Yep. You're constantly cooking, and you had a great suggestion this morning for an interview that we should do at the start today. You said, well, the stage is finishing in Limone Piemonte, so we should interview Sepulveda of Lotto. Mm-hmm. I asked why. You said because in Argentina they produce a lot of lemons. I said, well, are they the number one producer of lemons in the world? You said, no, they're fourth.
They're fourth, yeah.
Yeah.
Number one being India.
Wow, no Indian riders at the Vuelta a España. But yeah, we've had a fun day, Michele. As you said, we can't see much at the moment, but it's nice to be in the mountains, isn't it? It's nice to be breathing in that mountain air. This morning we were in Alba, and we've had food references already, but Alba, famously the home of Nutella, mm-hmm, the home of Ferrero Rocher. Mm-hmm. There were many rumours for many years, Michele, about Ferrero, because the Ferrero family or someone in the Ferrero family was a big cycling fan. Huh. They had an association with cycling, sponsored various things. They sponsored the Giro d'Italia with Estate, mm-hmm, iced tea, one of their brands. There were rumours for many years about Ferrero sponsoring a big team in Italy, a bit like there were always rumours about Barilla, the pasta, yeah, manufacturer. And it's never come to fruition. Do you know anything about that?
I don't, but I wish that will come to fruition anytime in the future. We'll see. This hamlet is called Limone 1400, because yes, it's above Limone.
Super Limone.
Or Panice Soprana. Which, yeah, Soprana, not Sottana. That stays below. Soprana stays above. And it's pretty peculiar part of Italy, I'd say, bordering with France. We're going in France in a couple of days. It's a strange place.
It is. Michele, I said we're in Alba this morning. Well, what was going on at the start in Alba this morning? Michele, I heard some very interesting rumors today, some of which I can't, some which I definitely can't repeat on the podcast, but there was some about transfer activity. Of course, we're in the middle of sort of silly season, transfer season in professional cycling. There's been a lot of speculation about Juan Ayuso, the UAE rider, co-leader, I suppose, with Joao Almeida on this Vuelta a España. And I think it was Chiro reported the other day that maybe Ayuso will be able to get out of his contract with UAE and join another team, maybe Little Trek next year. Well, I understand, based on what I heard at the start today, Michele, that Juan Ayuso would very much like to get out of his contract with UAE team Emirates. He's not unhappy, but he doesn't see this as a good solution for him, good situation going forward. However, at the moment, the answer from UAE is a firm no, but we know that Juan Ayuso has, he's taken on Giovanni Lombardi, the Italian agent, as his representative. Alongside his father, they're working together, Juan Ayuso's father and Giovanni Lombardi, and I believe Lombardi's still sort of looking for solutions. Movistar, I think, would be a solution. I think a lot of people are a bit skeptical about whether they would have enough money, but I think they do, and they would for Ayuso, and Little Trek would be another candidate as well. But I think there'll be more discussions about that at the end of the Vuelta a España. But as I said, for the moment, it's a no to Juan Ayuso leaving UAE at the end of the year. We know he's got a very long contract. But talking of Juan Ayuso, I can't remember whether it was dinner last night. Today's stage and the finish reminded me a little bit of the stage that Juan Ayuso won at the Giro d'Italia, which was to Tagliacozzo.
Tagliacozzo, in the Marcia.
Yeah. So he was a guy who was fancied for today's stage. Let's hear now, shall we, from Juan Ayuso this morning, what he was saying about cohabiting with Joao Almeida in this Vuelta a España. Let's also hear from another rider who's on the market, Jack Haig, and you're going to hear us refer to him, well, unfortunately, going through the back of the windscreen of a Jayco Alula team car. That wasn't today at the Vuelta a España, I'm glad to report, but that was in the Tour of Poland a couple of weeks ago, and unfortunately that's left Jack a bit worse for wear at the start of this Vuelta a España. So we're going to hear now from Ayuso and Haig. This was them speaking this morning.
Well, Vuelta, we've done two Vueltas already together, so I think, yeah, we know each other, and as I said before, I bet my form is still something I need to check racing and see where I am. I've only raced 2 days since the Giro, so it's been a different preparation and different build up towards this race.
Jack, if Jayco wanted you back on board, they could have just let you in the door instead of let you ride through the windscreen in Poland. But well, tell us, you mentioned some after effects of that crash in Poland. Just talk to us about them.
Yeah, it would have been nice if maybe they opened the rear boot of the car and just went inside rather than into the windscreen. But no, I've been suffering a little bit. I took a really light impact to my head again on the stage 3 crash, and then a lot of muscle soreness through the neck and the shoulders. But one of the things that's caused me the most issues is I think it was maybe Matthias Wajcik. His handlebars went directly into the back of my calf. And I was really been suffering with a lot of pain in the calf, and now that's sort of migrated down to my ankle, which is quite inflamed and sore, and we need to kind of see how that progresses these days now. After yesterday's stage and the extra intensity that you don't really get during training, it kind of made it a little bit worse, so we need to wait and see what happens going forward.
And I believe you're going to get checked out tomorrow before the stage.
Yeah, the idea is hopefully to try and go and get some kind of scan if the time permits before tomorrow's stage. It's easier to do it now while we're not traveling every day once we get more into Vuelta a España. And then obviously the day after, we've got a pretty hectic day with the transfer from France into Girona, and then you do team's time trial and the days start to get away. So hopefully I can get some form of scan tomorrow and have a bit more knowledge of what's going on.
And just lastly, Jack, still on the market?
Yeah, at the moment I don't have a place for next year. I think it's a bit of a strange rider market this year with a lot of things still up in the air. You have the Intermarché Lotto, you have maybe a few riders under contract that normally would be staying, but now there is circulating rumors that some of them might be changing, and with all this uncertainty, I think it's led to the rider market being quite slow since the Giro, basically. I think unless the guys were signed before Giro, I think now it seems to be a bit of a slowdown. There was maybe a few people signed during Tour de France, but probably not as many as other years. And that's kind of, left me in a bit of an unknown position for next year.
Michele, I'm going to jump ahead to this afternoon and after the finish. In fact, lest I forget later on in the episode, I spoke to Jack Haig again after the finish, and he said that his ankle was still giving him some problems. He's going to go for that scan tomorrow morning. He thinks it might be bursitis, liquid in the ankle. Hopefully, Jack will be able to resolve that problem before the end of the Vuelta, and surely Jack will find a team that wants him for next year, because he's an outstanding rider, former podium finisher in the Vuelta.
I might need the same scan on my knees after Superga. I was running.
Yeah, Pelacci was a DNS for running this morning. Yeah. All these young journalists, they come with us, you know, full of bluster, full of bravado about what they're going to do on the morning runs. And as has happened before with others who have preceded you, Michele, DNS on stage two, because you had dodgy knees after yesterday's ascent and descent of Superga. Let's find out what happened today on the stage to Limone Piemonte. It's the time for the Jamonometro.
El Jamonometro de Michele Pelacci.
Pelacci, before we go any further, Jamon. We talked yesterday about your family's glorious heritage. Pelacci's family is sort of the Waltons of prosciutto in the center of Italy. A very powerful family when it comes to ham and prosciutto. Michele, you were sort of hassling, hectoring some people brandishing trays of jamon at the start this morning. They were from the sponsor, the much maligned sponsor, El Pozo, who mass produce ham in Spain, and you wanted to get a taste. I watched you having this tasting of the ham, and I heard you as well telling them, delicious, really good, I'm really enjoying your ham. And you lied. You're a big liar, because I asked you later whether you'd enjoy it or not, and you said no, it was disgusting. And this is appropriate, because we went through a town at the bottom of the climb today. I think it was called, was it Vernante?
Yep.
And that little town, it's not a town, it's a village, is famous because a local artist has painted the houses with all sorts of drawing scenes from Pinocchio.
A lot of them, like the entire Pinocchio story is on the walls of this little village. And it's called the Pinocchio Village because
you
of
are
this.
Pelacci the Pinocchio of the cycling podcast. Anyway,
I lied just because they went to me with a camera to my face. So what could they say? Could they say, this is too fat on this prosciutto, too oil, too... It was
very heavy.
I ate just a couple of small slices and it felt heavy on my stomach. I don't want to have that.
You sit on a throne of lies, Michele Pelacci. What happened in today? Well, first of all, how many hams for today's stage out of five?
Three, but just commercial ham, industrial prosciutto. We don't like that, of course. But three out of five, it's not that bad. 3 hours of nothing today's stage was. It was a good finale, though. Let's dive right into it. Right from the start, in Alba, few riders tried to get on the breakaway. Alex Segart and Nico Denz tried their luck, but at the end, it was Gal Glivar of Alpecin, Jakub Otruba of Caja Rural, Liam Slok of Lotto, and Sinuhe Fernandez of Burgos. These were the four ones who formed today's breakaway.
Can I interrupt immediately with a nice bit of trivia that was given to me by Killian Kelly. Liam Slok, named Liam, why? Because his mother is a big fan of the actor, Irish actor Liam Neeson.
Interesting. I know who he is, surprisingly.
We'll get on to your more cultural naivety later on.
Not too much happened in the first 3 hours of racing. Liam Slok won the intermediate sprint in Busca, and as the race approached Limone, it started raining heavily. Sinuhe Fernandez was the first breakaway rider to be caught. Guillaume Martin, the philosopher himself, is the first rider to abandon the race because of a crash. His first DNF in 2 years.
Extraordinary, because he is the rider who DNFs the least in the world. I think he's DNFed three times in his whole career, never DNF'd a stage race. So for him to be the first DNF of the world is extraordinary.
On a roundabout, with around 30k to go, a big crash happened. Vingegaard and Pidcock were involved. The Dane had to change his bike. A pretty complete peloton, though, approached the final climb with gradients that slowly became harder and harder. Great work was done by a little trek for Giulio Ciccone, with Andrea Bajoli leading the peloton under the Flamme Rouge. Giulio Pellizzari tried to up the pace for Jai Hindley. Marc Soler and Felix Gall went full Fagianata mode. but it came down.
Fagianata, we need to explain what a fagianata is. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. It's when in sort of, this is a term coined by the Italian commentator Riccardo Magrini, who talked about the way riders sometimes sort of scuttle off on one side of the road, almost unnoticed, in the fashion of a pheasant.
Exactly.
And fagiano is pheasant in Italian, so fagianata.
It came down to a sprint between Vingegaard and Ciccone in the last 200 meters, and Jonas Vingegaard did the famous Tappa Emaglia bis il Limone Piemonte.
Remarkable stuff, and it's a long time. It had been a long time since Vingegaard's last victory, hadn't it, Pelacci? We just, both of us are just looking, just frantically trying to look up Vingegaard's results. But I did mean to look this up. How many days it had been? Because it's a lot of days, isn't it?
Surely, Daniele, his last stage win in a Grand Tour was also a two-man sprint, right? Against Pogacar at Le Lioran. And that day as well was just a tiny margin victory for Jonas Vingegaard.
His last individual victory since the Volta al Algarve. In February, the 23rd of February. So a big relief, I would suggest, for Jonas Vingegaard. And an interesting denouement to today's stage, because obviously it puts him in that jersey, and it will probably put him in that jersey for a while, won't it, Pelacci? Because we've got a stage that might be won by, contested by sprinters. Mads Pedersen, you thought Mads Pedersen was going to win today. But it was another, alas, it was another Dane. Pelacci, I was standing watching the finish with Pelacci, and with 2 kilometers to go, he was still sort of craning his neck. We were watching on a big screen, trying to see whether Mads Pedersen was still there and still...
ended up 6 minutes down. Yeah,
alas. And Pelacci, we should run down, you mentioned Ciccone, it was a photo finish, very close run thing. Excellent third place for David Gaudu, his love affair, Salt Bay's love affair with the Vuelta a España continues. Egan Bernal, also an impressive fourth place. João Almeida in fifth, Félix Gal sixth, Jai Hindley seventh, Juan Ayuso eighth, Jorgensen ninth. Tom Pidcock, his team Q36.5, worked the whole day. He told us this morning that he was feeling really good. He was feeling fresh, much fresher than he did in the Giro d'Italia. And his team would control today, and they did control. He was 10th. I'm going to stop there, Pelacci, and just say that there were no general classification riders who lost any time today, were there? I hope I'm not wrong in
I
that.
I have an exception, go on, actually. Tiberi was 21 seconds down. That's kind of interesting, because he was Italy's probably biggest hope for a podium.
Yeah, that is a disappointing start. We thought there might be some GC riders caught out today, because of course the first, well, we discussed this yesterday, didn't we? The first summit finish of a Grand Tour, especially when they've done as many flat kilometres as these riders have done in the last couple of days, it can catch some people out, and it caught out Tiberi. I'm glad you mentioned that. Pelacci, general classification, we've got Vingegaard 4 seconds ahead of Ciccone now, thanks to bonus seconds, of course. The points jersey, Philipsen still has that. He's got a 10-point advantage still over Ethan Vernon. Weighted very much, that competition is weighted towards the flatter stages, of course. The KOM jersey won't be worn by Jonas Vingegaard tomorrow, but he is the leader of that competition. Alessandro Verre, who was in the KOM jersey already today.
He was, yep.
Yeah, so he'll still be wearing that tomorrow. And we've got Juan Ayuso leading in the white jersey competition. Pelacci, let's hear from a couple of the protagonists, shall we? We're going to hear from Sepkus, who I thought did a sterling job in the last kilometre, particularly when Marc Soler did Marc Soler things. We're not entirely sure what he was thinking or trying to do, but he briefly got a gap, didn't he? Sort of wild, crazy horse style, and Sepkus hunted him down, which provided a valuable lead out for Vingegaard. We're going to hear Sepkus talking about that, and we're going to hear from Tom Pidcock as well. I said that his team did excellent work today. Pidcock faded a little bit. He was sort of neck and neck with Ciccone, and it looked at that point, he looked very good earlier on the climb. It looked as though he might be poised, primed for a stage win. Alas, that was not the case. So we're going to hear from Pidcock as well.
I guess it was just a bit slippy, but no, it was okay. I mean, I was still on two wheels, and then I was heading straight for that lamppost, so I decided to jump on the grass. But, yeah, I don't know if my bike's all right. It was wobbling a bit, but I thought I'd just stay on this. We weren't afraid to commit and take on the day, and chapeau to the boys for that, because, yeah, I mean, an opportunity. I think, yeah, we can not be afraid to take it. But then, yeah, in the last 100 metres there, I just, yeah, ran out of legs. I mean, everyone came past me with speed, and, you know, I knew I wasn't going to win, so...
Tom, obviously Chicone went quite early, you sort of followed him. Anything you could have done differently? You looked kind of easy on the climb before that point.
Yeah, I think I was going quite good. I just, yeah, that final kick didn't have, but I can be pretty happy with the legs there, to be honest.
How proud are you of the way the team had ridden up until the point where they crashed?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's great. You know, we take the race on, and yeah, you know, we're a wild card team, but we take it on, so yeah, we can be happy with that.
Well, Sepp, you did a key job there when Soler attacked with about 300 metres to go. I mean, was that just acting on instinct, reacting on instinct?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard. There were so many guys on the, you know, wide road, so it was, yeah, just a matter of not being boxed in at the key moment. But, yeah, I mean, I knew Jonas could do really well in this finish. He's super fast still, so yeah, if we kept a high pace there in the last K and didn't let anybody get any gap, then it would be good.
So a great start, but it didn't look as though things were going too well with 26K to go when, well, half the team came down. Just tell us what happened.
It was super slippery, and one of the first riders that went through the roundabout just slid out. It happens, and then yeah, it was so slippery. I don't even think I braked, and we hit the ground. But yeah, at least it was sliding.
And well, you got the jersey now. Any sort of idea already about how hard you guys are going to try to defend this jersey over the next few days?
Oh, I mean, next few days are definitely more for the sprinters. So yeah, we have to take more responsibility. But yeah, in the end, it'll fall on them the next stages, and then team time trial. That's a big goal for us anyways, so yeah, we'll take stock after that one.
Of course.
Go on, introduce yourself. Who are you?
I'm Alessandra Della Locelli. I'm half English, half Italian.
And you're a big fan of the podcast. You must be our youngest listener, I think.
Well, I didn't know that.
Who's your favourite rider?
Well, I have a lot of favourites. I like Tadej Pogacar and Ben O'Connor. And I also like Filippo Ganna. And there are a lot of others, but I couldn't list them all.
And who's going to win today?
I don't know.
Come on, give me a name. One name.
Can I give you two?
I can't promise a cash prize if one of them wins.
Ben O'Connor or Filippo Ganna.
Fantastic. Well, it's lovely to meet you, Alessandra, and your whole family.
Thanks.
Opelachi, well, I'd never met anyone younger than you until until this afternoon, and that was one of our young fans, Alessandra. Apologies to Alessandra, because I've had you on this as well, listening to the pronunciation of her surname, and neither of us were 100% confident that we were getting it right. But Alessandra and her family, of course, know who they are. And that was a lovely chance encounter with a cycling podcast fan on the top of the final climb, or just adjacent to the finish line. And then Alessandra, after doing the interview and after the finish, unfortunately her tip for victory today, one of her tips, Filippo Ganna, he came in about 6 minutes down, didn't he? I thought he might have a chance today. But Alessandra then approached me with some Haribo, and I politely took one. I don't usually eat sweets, but I politely took one, and I think she was offering them to some of the riders as well. We know that they do enjoy a Haribo after stages. That's something we often see. But Pelacci, Tappa Imalia, stage win, and the leader's jersey for Jonas Vingegaard. And I think I tipped him yesterday, but certainly it didn't surprise me. Did it surprise you?
It kind of did, because
you thought Pedersen was going to win. Go on.
I think what surprised me the most was how he reacted after the win. Did you see him, Daniele? He was waving his fist in the air, punching there. Like, I could see in his eyes, in his behavior, in those little seconds, a bit of frustration coming out of him. a bit of relief, maybe, you said it before, but it was impressive the way he was able to overtake Ciccone in the last 25 meters. He has it. He's bringing it to the Vuelta. You know, it was not a big test today. He was helped by Kuss. Not a huge effort. Only the last 2K were tough. But, you know, first impressions, so far so good from Vingegaard.
And I think all of the general classification riders, whether they wanted to go for the stage win or not, they were always going to get sort of dragged in today, because you never know when the group is going to split and when you're going to be on the wrong side of a time gap. So they all sort of had to be at the front, didn't they? So there's no question of kind of keeping their powder dry, not wanting to get the red jersey, not wanting to defend it. They clearly saw that it was going to be a battle between the GC riders, although, as we said earlier, there wasn't much damage done, but they were there where they needed to be. And I think it was a good gauge, even if there wasn't time gained and lost. I think that was a good gauge, litmus test of people's form. If you look at where they all finished, I think you saw that Ayuso was maybe a little bit rusty. We knew that he'd only had 2 days of racing before the Vuelta a España. We saw that João Almeida is in really good form, because this could have been a dangerous finish for João Almeida. We know that when there's a big fight for position at the bottom of climbs, he doesn't necessarily like that. He hasn't liked that in the past, and he can suffer on days like this. Félix Gal as well, the same could be said of him. A little bit disappointing for Pidcock, I think. He didn't seem to suggest that the crash earlier on, when, as he mentioned in the interview, he almost hit a lamppost there, fortunately avoided that. But he didn't suggest that that had affected him too much. His timing was maybe a little bit off when he went with Ciccone. I think Ciccone's timing was definitely slightly off. I think he could have won the stage today. I think he'll be cursing having launched the sprint as early as he did.
He opened the gas probably too soon. Great work from Bajoli. Something can be said about Bajoli, because he's been injured out of big races. We have not seen the best of him very much in this season as well, and we could see him in very great shape at the finish line as well. He was with family, girlfriend, his dog Maya as well, his fan club. Good to see this great, I mean, promising Italian rider doing well. Unfortunately for Ciccone, yes, close but no cigar. Daniel, I think we should take couple of seconds to discuss how Egan Bernal was doing. We did not expect to see him in a good punchy way up here. He was fourth, same time as the leader.
Pelaccio, just noticed something actually.
Go ahead.
Was a gap.
Huh.
The Joao Almeida, they've been put on 2 seconds, that group. So there was more of a gap than we realized. I don't know whether the general classification has been, or the results were different from the provisional ones, but I've just noticed that. Sorry, so forget everything we just said about no time having been gained or lost. 2 seconds, obviously,
it's not
a lot, but Almeida was the first man who didn't make it over the drawbridge, so to speak. He was fifth, and everyone below Almeida. So the only ones who gained time on the rest were Bernal, Soltbay, Gaudu, David Gaudu, Ciccone, and Vingegaard. Sorry, Pelacci, carry on.
No, Bernal was the biggest racer in the general classification. He gained 130 positions, and he's fourth now in GC as well. I think we can expect some good stuff from him, from his team. You know, interesting from Bernal. Keep an eye on him.
Pelacci, I don't want to say I'm disappointed that with Red Bull today. They were certainly well positioned coming into the last kilometer, but we talked, I think, last night in the podcast as well about how they were going to play their cards. We wondered about Sobrero. He told us that he was going to go for today's stage. We wondered how that was going to happen. Fisher Black, I thought, had a good chance as well today. I dispatched you to talk to him this morning. What did he say this morning?
He played down his chances, but he said he was going to help other riders, such as Hindley, such as Sobrero. But both Sobrero and Fisher Black himself, around 30 seconds down, not great start for them.
Not great, but not bad either. I think Hindley finishing seventh, that clearly shows us that Jai Hindley, and I was speaking to some people who know Hindley well this morning, they were saying that he's in really good form and he's happy with his form. So they were sort of keeping their fingers crossed, and the early signs are encouraging with Jai Hindley. The other thing we should consider as well, Pelacci, when we talk about who will be happy and unhappy after today, is that all of the GC riders will have been happy to have avoided the chaos and crashes which started to happen really in that phase of the race with sort of 40 to 20 kilometers to go, 15 kilometers to go, when it started to get wet and it started to get treacherous. And we did see crashes. We saw one in particular we talked about with Pidcock, and we talked about with the Visma Lisa bike as well. They had several riders come down. None of the GC riders seem to have suffered any serious injuries or any significant injuries from that. However, we did see one Visma Lisa bike rider suffer an injury, and there was some fairly graphic viewing thereafter, wasn't there?
Because Axel Zingel, he's now wearing the maglia nera of this Vuelta a España. He came 23 minutes down of the winner. He's suffering. I could see the replay. He was having a massage on his left leg, probably hit the knee or the lower leg. So keep an eye on this.
The graphic nature of that crash, what I was referring to, was when, we saw him, didn't we, having to pop. We think he was having to pop his shoulder back in. He'd maybe dislocated his shoulder a la Philippe in the Tour de France in Carcassonne. That was the famous stage where Alaphilippe thought he'd won the stage, and it was actually Wout van Aert who'd won the stage. But earlier on, Alaphilippe had put his shoulder out and he'd have to pop it back in, and that's happened to Primoz Roglic before, hasn't it? I can't remember where, but certainly he's done that as well. So Zingler still in the race, but we don't know in what kind of shape he's going to be tomorrow. Pellacci, this morning, I've already talked about Ayuso, we spoke to him this morning, Jack Haig, but this morning we also sought out the subject of our Encuentro del Día. It wasn't, alas, Sepúlveda.
I wonder why.
Sepúlveda of Argentina, lest we forget, the fourth biggest producer of lemons in the world, lemons which have absolutely nothing to do with Limone Piemonte. No, Pellacci, I wanted to speak to an Ineos Grenadiers rider, and it's a rider whose name I never know how to pronounce, because in Italian it should be Langelotti, but in Monegasque, because he is from Monaco, it's Langelotti, I suppose. French being the first language in Monaco. I'm talking about Victor Langelotti, of course, 30 years old, first year on Ineos Grenadiers this year. He's ridden the Vuelta a España many times, I think it's seven times before this year, always for Burgos Biache. And he's a rider who's been getting better and better. As I say, 30 years old, but this is his first year in the World Tour. And it's going pretty well. It has been going pretty well. After a quietish spring, he was second in GC in the Tour of Norway. And he was fifth in the Tour of Poland, of course, just a few weeks ago, having led into the final stage, the time trial. He lost the jersey on the final day. But he's a rider who we've been curious about for a few years because he was from Monaco. His father is the president of the Monaco Cycling
Federation.
But he also had a really interesting sort of origin story, and we became aware of this a couple of years ago. He previously suffered from an unusual addiction. Pellacci, what was that addiction?
Is that video games?
It was video games, and one video game in particular. Now, our friends, our colleagues at Relevo interviewed Langelotti a couple of years ago about this, and he talked about his addiction to FIFA in particular. I'm just going to read the quote from that interview with Relevo from a couple of years ago. I no longer lived with my father and there was no one to control me. I started playing 2 to 3 hours a day and got to the point where I was doing practically nothing else but playing games. I no longer had a social life. I was playing FIFA from breakfast until the time I went to bed at 5 a.m. in the morning. I'd become an aggressive person. Every time I lost the game, I would get angry and break things. By now, I was addicted. If they took away my PlayStation, I would take the personal computer. It was my girlfriend who told me to wake up. What are you doing with your life? I'd fulfilled my dream of bike racing and I was throwing it in the dustbin. He said that the turning point came in 2020 when his father called him and proposed he took part in the European Championships. He weighed 50 pounds. This interview has been translated. 50 pounds, I don't know how many kilos. That's a lot of kilos, more than I do now. I decided to set that race as my goal and get there the best I could. So I sold the PlayStation, the Xbox, the Switch, and even the computer. Well, fast forward a few years, Victor Langelotti is here in the Vuelta a España. He's riding for Ineos Grenadiers, and he was the subject of today's Encuentro del Día.
El Encuentro del Día, the meeting of the day.
Well, Victor, we're here at the Vuelta a España. I just wanted, first of all, to ask you, we had the news that Monaco is going to host the start of the Vuelta next year. I mean, how exciting is this for you?
I'm super excited, and I mean, it's a big honor to host a Grand Tour start. And yeah, obviously I'm looking forward to it next year. But I mean, first of all, here we are at the start of the second stage of the Vuelta. So, I mean, first things first, just think about today's stage at the moment.
Obviously your first year in the World Tour, when Ineos signed you, people maybe raised their eyebrows, and they still look at you as a sort of strange beast in professional cycling, a Monaco cyclist. Did you feel this? Did you sense that people were kind of confused by Ineos signing you?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like everything in life. Something new sounds strange to people. So we are not used to have a Monegasque rider in the World Tour. So for people, it sounds strange. But I mean, I don't worry about it. I take it. And I mean, I also receive a lot of cheering and a lot of, let's say, love from the fans. So yeah, I take the positive of it.
And you must be really pleased with the way the year has gone. I know that in the start of the year, you maybe didn't have the results, but people said you rode very well. And then, of course, you've had the results in the last month or so.
Yeah, the thing is that I think I need to adapt to the team, to the way of racing. It's a little bit different. I mean, very different from last year in Burgos. The expectations are not the same, and my role in the team is not the same. So I had a period of adaptation, and now it's going better and better, and I could show it a few weeks ago in Poland. So I think, we are on the right way, and I hope to continue like this.
I won't be the first journalist to ask you about this period. I spoke with you in the Vuelta 2 years ago about this period, a few years ago, when you had the problem with the video games and FIFA, and yeah, I think you put on a lot of weight and you were struggling. When you think back to that period now, do you think that you were just someone who was lost or someone who needed better advice? What do you think about that period now?
I think I grew up and I mature. I didn't have the maturity enough to solve those problems. It took me a long time to solve them. But that now I'm super happy to have those problems behind me. And now it's just, I'm just super happy to be in cycling, to be in a great team like Ineos and enjoying every day. So, I just don't want to think anymore about those days and look forward.
I will ask you one more thing. Do you still play FIFA?
No, not anymore.
No interest?
No.
And, last thing then, do you feel as though you wasted years? Do you feel now that, I wish this was all happening when I was 23?
Yeah, of course. When I think about it, I have some big, big regrets because, I threw up like 5-6 years of my career. I have big regrets about it, but now, yeah, it's like this, and I have to move on.
Well, Pelacci, we're not quite two-thirds into the Vuelta a España's sojourno in Piemonte. It's temporary residence in Piemonte, because, of course, we've got the whole stage tomorrow, which the whole stage tomorrow, I think, is in the province of Turin. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And then we've got the start the following day as well, which is still in Piemonte. But generally speaking, Pelacci, 2 days in, how are you feeling about this Gran Salida in Piemonte? We've had good crowds today. We had good crowds today. We had good crowds in Novara yesterday.
We did. It's interesting how I saw comments from friends of these valleys. They live in the Valle di Lanzo, where tomorrow's stage will be. They live in province of Cuneo, where today's stage was. And they were saying, 2 weeks ago, we could see nothing. Like, not even a red balloon or a red bike popping outside of the roads. So, this Vuelta a España has been well adopted in the day of the race, in the previous day, but has not built anything long-lasting, so to speak, in Italy. It's probably going to be, yeah, an event that passes by, and the next day it will probably be forgotten by people around here.
Tough crowd, your friends.
I don't know. It's been insular, Daniel, I think. This event, if you see how today, for example, in Alba this morning, we were not in the center of Alba. Alba is teeny tiny. Could have been in the center. I get it. It's a choice, right? You can make the riders do a big transfer from their buses to the signature podium and the team presentation. They did not. It was all in a parking lot. But it was so non-assuming, right? It was like a parking lot outside of Alba, not of the beautiful, Piedmontese little town was seen by the fans, by the people there. It was quite depressing, actually.
Well, as I said, Bellacci, a very tough crowd. I've enjoyed your company so far, particularly unfortunately, you've not really been enlightening us too much outside of the episodes on, well, certainly cultural matters, Bellacci, because there have been some shocking moments in the car over the last couple of days. Like, for example, you wondering whether Elton John was a member of the Beatles. Elvis Presley as well, at one point. You're asking whether he'd been...
I've got a fact with you right away for you. So... today's stage passed through Lurisia, right?
Yes.
A small town in Piedmont. You know who visited Lurisia many decades ago?
Go on.
Scientist Marie Curie.
Okay.
This gentil donna was born, she's about your age, right?
Oh, God, here we go. Go on.
But Marie Curie, she studied the waters of Lurisia, which is now a source for, it's just a industrial water of Italy.
Mm.
And Lurisia, she found out that Lurisia has radioactive waters, and they are, curative and benefice because of this. Yeah, waters.
Wow.
Special waters. Today's stage, I've got some other nuggets.
Okay, one. We can have maybe one more nugget.
Just one.
It's not McDonald's.
One more. Esteban Chavez today talked to the media, and he says that he remembers Alba very well because in 2011, he won Tour de l'Avenir in Alba.
Excellent. What was the third nugget going to be?
This is amazing. Are you ready?
Is it quick?
It deals with Egypt.
Egypt. Okay. This was a good one, I think.
So, the rider in the breakaway today, I'm starting to feel in love with the Spanish debutant riders for Burgos Beache.
Yeah. We came back to the car today. After doing interviews in the morning. Pellacci, we found Pellacci just casually chatting to one of the Burgos Beache riders, just in a sort of dusty kind of roadside bar, not particularly close to the start. It was a very surreal scene. We're going to talk about Salvador Dalí in a minute, and this was a sort of Dalian scene of Pellacci, who was the Burgos Beache rider,
Daniel Cavia,
just shooting the breeze with him miles away from the start. It was very strange. Go on.
I'm becoming friends with Daniel. Not you, Daniel. Another Daniel.
Go on.
So the guy in the breakaway today, Sinuhe Fernandez, I was googling Sinuhe. What kind of name is this? And I found out that an ancient work of Egyptian literature is called The Story of Sinuhe. It was written in verse. It's divided in stanzas. But yeah, let's not dive right into too much into Middle Ages Egypt, because Daniel, you want the craziest Egypt story of this.
go on.
I keep saying Giro d'Italia. No, Vuelta a España. So we've got one guy here named like the Pope, as Leo Bizio, right?
Yes.
And we've got one other guy named after a former Egyptian pharaoh. That's Ramses de Bruin of Lotto.
Wow. Even occasionally you come up with some gems, but I suppose even a blind squirrel every now and again finds an acorn. I mentioned Salvador Dalí, and your predecessor on the Vuelta, the cycling podcast at the Vuelta a España, a Fran Reyes, who, of course, as we've alluded to, is at the Vuelta. I'm not going to say who he's working for, but he's working on the other side of the fence, shall we say. This will probably come out at some point in the wash. Fran had listened to our preview podcast, in which I'd been sort of scrambling for Salvador Dalí references to do with cycling. And there are some. I'm going to save them mainly for when we're in Spain and when we're in Figueres, which was the hometown of Salvador Dalí. But he reminded me of a quote about cycling from Salvador Dalí. Summer is over when bikes reach Paris.
Wow.
Referring to the Tour de France. There are a few things about Dalí and the Tour de France and cycling, which we will dive into in due course. There was something else. Oh, Pellacci, just before we talk about tomorrow's stage, I will mention also we're in Italy. We've been talking about Italians and the Vuelta a España. Today's Guía a las Gorras. I mentioned yesterday that every day at this one, it may not be every day, but I'm trying at this Vuelta a España to repeat what I did at Giro d'Italia on my Strava account, giving a little bit of a history lesson linked to racing caps. Today's was about the 2000 Vuelta a España, when Mario Cipollini, the Lion King, was kicked out of the race for committing his own act of physical violence on the Spanish rider Francisco Cerezo. Cerezo means cherry tree, but which sounds very genteel. But it wasn't a genteel incident because there was a bit of a scuffle in a sprint in Albacete the next morning at sign-on. Cipollini apprehended Cerezo and, well, hit him with a right hook. He floored him, physically assaulted him. It was a very unsavory incident. So much so that Cipollini was unceremoniously kicked out of the Vuelta a España, suspended indefinitely by his Saeco team. And I think Cerezo needed 3 stitches above his eyes. So a very nasty incident. And that was the end of Mario Cipollini's 2000... Vuelta a España. Pellacci, the rain is starting to fall on us, but we're going to press on. Oh, it's Vuelta a España continues. We're going to talk about tomorrow's stage and yesterday's dinner.
La etapa de mañana, la cena de ayer. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's food.
Pellacci, last night's dinner. You can tell the listeners what we had. It was a typical Piedmontese fare.
Yeah, most of them. We were staying at Il Ristoro in Lu Monferrato, a sub part of Piedmont. It was a KOM sprint up in Lu in last year's Giro d'Italia.
You didn't mention the other race that took place, that went through Lu yesterday. The other bike race. We discovered this when we arrived yesterday.
Yeah, because none other than Romain Bardet won a gravel race, Monsterrando, which take place in Monferrato.
Yesterday.
Yeah, amazing. We were there.
Yeah.
Didn't see the race.
Yeah. In fact, when we checked into our hotel, the receptionist asked us, are you here for the bike race? Thinking we meant the gravel race won by Bardetto that day. But we were, of course, there for another bike race.
Amazing stuff. Amazing name. I love short names. Lou is just the shortest 2 letters. And that's it. We had a big dish of antipasti misti, Daniele, and then agnolotti, which is a typical pasta filled with meat. And then finally, a secondo, I had a stracotto, a very good overcooked meat.
Casserole, stewed meat, yeah.
Lovely. Great wine as well.
Fantastic. Barbera, we're in the Monferrato. You've got sort of one side of the Tanaro River, you've got the Monferrato. The other side, you've got the Langhe Hills. The Langhe Hills are a little bit posher. But the Monferrato is a beautiful area as well. And in both areas, the Langhe is famous for Barolo and Barbaresco. The Monferrato, probably more famous for Barbera. And we had the beautiful Barbera last night. And this morning we went for a run. You were absent, Pellacci, but we saw the Barbera, these very small, dark grapes growing and weighing down all of the vines around Lu, not too far away from harvest time now. But it was a very enjoyable dinner. Pellacci, tomorrow we're not in wine producing country anymore. We're in the Canavese. Do you want to tell the listeners about tomorrow's stage?
I am, but you're just real quick again.
Go on then.
You reminded me of the conspiracy theory I love the most.
Go on.
It's about the rivers. So when River Po, the longest river in Italy, and Fiume Tanaro meet, the Tanaro has most miles. So the river that continues should be called Tanaro, right? Not Po. Okay. So it's the Po that goes into the Tanaro, not vice versa, like it's today. Okay. So the Pianura Padana would be called Pianura Tanaria.
Huh.
That's so interesting, right?
This is very niche polemica. But anyway, go on.
Tomorrow's stage, dear listeners, is the dream for every journalist, for every chap in the press room.
Why?
Because the start in San Maurizio Canavese and the finish in Ceres are very close. The race goes up north, doing a big loop over Puerto Isilio, second category climb. Then they come back in the Valle di Lanzo. Meanwhile, for us, we'll be just 30 minutes by car, just to the west. So, uphill finale to Ceres. A teeny tiny municipality, not even 1,000 people. There, the final is on a fourth category climb, but the real climb is pretty easy and short. 1K at 5% average, 135 kilometers in total, 2,000 meters of elevation almost. That's a Mats Pedersen type of day, isn't it?
Tomorrow, I will allow you to predict that Mats Pedersen is going to win tomorrow's stage. I think that that is a very good bet, Pelacci, and I think they'll be up for it. Do you know one thing I haven't said yet in the Vuelta, in our podcast? When Mats Pedersen is present at a race for Little Trek, I think the whole team raises their game. We saw this at the Giro d'Italia with Ciccone. We saw a different, more relaxed Ciccone, more confident Ciccone. Of course, then he crashed out.
Yeah, Verona, Hule as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we'll see that. We'll see that at this Vuelta a España. There was a bit of debate on Spanish national TV after the stage about who had the better team, Visma or Little Trek, for the team time trial that we've got in a couple of days. Perico Delgado, of course, Spanish legend, he felt that Little Trek might have a stronger team than Visma Lisabike, but that remains to be seen. Pelacci, that is about it. Oh, you mentioned tomorrow's stage. I was just going to allude to the fact that we're finishing pretty close to Ivrea, and Ivrea is the home of Olivetti. What's the name of the founder, but the Olivetti family. The Olivetti dynasty is an absolutely fascinating story. Olivetti typewriters, of course, and other things manufactured. And they really took over Ivrea. Everyone in Ivrea worked for Olivetti, but they were revolutionary in the things they did for their employees, offered them holidays, created holiday camps just for their employees and their
Adriano children.
Adriano, if you are interested, there's lots of information about this online. And Adriano was suspected of being a spy at one point, I think being in cahoots with the CIA or the Russians, suspecting it might have been vice versa. But anyway, absolutely fascinating story, fascinating family, fascinating company. And we finished near Ivrea, as I say, tomorrow, which was the city of Olivetti. We'll be back tomorrow, Pelacci. Until then.
Hasta mañana.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne.